to the Women of FinTech podcast series. We are here today to celebrate the wins, raise awareness of the challenges, and walk the talk for change across the entire financial technology industry. Today, we are joined by Kate Wilson, Global Head Consumer Credit Deposits and Payments at RFI Global. RFI Global is the only global data and insights company focusing exclusively on financial services. Kate joined RFI's research team in 2012 and currently heads up one of the RFI's four global business units. She is a regular speaker at conferences and events and is here today to share her story and some of the learns along the way. Kate, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Brilliant. So tell us about your role at RFI and what it entails.
Yeah, so RFI, as you said, we're a global insights company. So we do market research, but specifically in banking and financial services. And my role is to head up all of the consumer research that we do in the credit, deposits and payments space. So I manage a global team of analysts who work on all of the data that we collect. I present to clients across the globe. And I'm, as I said before, I'm a speaker at conferences as well. So a lot of my role is about going out there and making sure that our data is getting sort of the eyeballs that it needs, and also making sure that the data is what we need it to be in terms of giving our clients the right outcomes and the right insights.
So actually, it's quite external facing, isn't it?
It is. So I spend sort of most of my day talking to clients, presenting to clients, and then sort of working with the team on our reports.
Yeah, amazing. And look, you have been at RFI since 2012. Mm. Like, that is an amazing, amazing journey you must have had over all those years. So what kept you there for so long? Because this is actually an anomaly in today's industry. Mm. We don't see tenures that long, but it's definitely something that we should celebrate, and it'd be lovely to hear more about it.
Yeah, so I hit 10 years at RFI this year, and it really crept up on me. It doesn't feel like I've been there that long, for sure. And I think there's sort of two reasons why I've stayed that long. One is the subject matter that I get to work on. So I went to RFI straight out of uni, and when I had finished uni, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd done a pretty broad degree, so there were different areas that I could go into. I didn't really know much about market research. I wasn't interested in financial services, but what I liked the idea of was understanding trends and why people do things and trying to dig into sort of data and numbers from that perspective. So I joined RFI thinking, you know, I'll see how this goes. I'll see if I like it. And I really loved it. I really like working with data and really unpicking why are consumers doing things? What does that mean for our clients, and what should they do in response to that? And financial services, which I'd never really thought much about before and thought was maybe, you know, a bit of a boring area, once I started working in it, I just absolutely loved it. It's really one of the only things I think that touches everyone, at least in developed markets. Everyone has banking products. Everyone needs banking products. It's an area where I think there's a lot of change happening constantly. So there's always lots of different things that we are focused on. FinTech, I particularly love because FinTech's so focused on solving customer problems. And I think there's a really nice intersection there between what our clients are trying to do and what we're trying to do with our data. So I really love the area that I work in. And then RFI itself is a relatively small, or was when I started at least, a relatively small company, but growing really quickly and actually continuing to grow really quickly. And for me, that meant that I got to do lots of different things. I got to wear lots of hats. I know it's not for everyone. Some people prefer to have sort of a very specific role, but it meant that I could do really what I wanted to and make the role my own. And I've got lots of different opportunities to work in different roles with different people, with different clients. And it doesn't feel like I've been in the one job for 10 years. It feels like I've done lots of different jobs. So that's what I really love about the company.
And it definitely sounds that way. And I love the fact that you just shared that you're interested in trends and talking to people and understanding those trends, and you didn't really have much interest in market research or in financial services. And, you know, look at actually how plentiful that has been for you as a career and how much you love it now. So it's really fantastic that you shared that. So with some of your career journey, what have been the biggest standout lessons that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I was sort of thinking about this morning and thinking actually probably the key one for me is becoming a presenter. So when I was working at RFI initially, I never really imagined myself standing up in front of clients and presenting data. I absolutely never imagined speaking at conferences. It just wasn't something I thought, I don't think I thought I'd be particularly good at it, or something I thought I'd be just way too nervous to stand up in front of clients and to talk about data or to talk about anything really. And I think that's probably common, not just for I think for women especially, but probably I'm sure for men as well. The idea of being a public speaker is quite scary. my boss at the time said, why don't you just do the training and see if you like it? So just have a go at it. And I sort of did the training internally thinking I'm never going to be a presenter, and then did my first presentation to a client and just loved it. It's probably my favorite part of my job.
Amazing. Good for you.
Having that conversation with clients and not just, yeah, here's a data point, but really talking to them about what they're doing with the data, what problems they're trying to solve for their customers. And then, yes, again, sort of going to conferences and being able to share our data on a broader stage and have those conversations. The key lesson I take from that is you just have to try things. So things that, especially things that scare you, I still get nervous talking at conferences, but you kind of have to push through, give it a go and see what can come out of it. And that's where you learn and where you grow and when you're challenged, but also just opens the door to opportunities you wouldn't have otherwise had.
Amazing. And it's just such a wonderful story for you to share so openly and honestly, because I think a lot of people see individuals at events and conferences standing up there talking and they think, well, you know, that's just not my personality. That person must really enjoy being on the stage.
Yeah.
And for you to share that journey, that actually you've had to work really hard at that.
Yeah.
And you still get those feelings in your tummy. It's great that you're sharing it, and thank you for your honesty. You touched upon there, you know, perhaps, you know, being a woman within the industry, that's had its own challenges. We do still face barriers for inclusion. It's quite evident at, you know, industry events. I know you've said the same as well. What would you like to see change at these industry events to make it more inclusive?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is about having more diverse voices and having them elevated. I think we've come a long way, even just in the 10 years I've worked in the industry. I know that I see just so many more women speaking on panels and doing keynote presentations at events. And RFI, we actually do our own events as well. So I've really been on both sides of it. And I have seen, you know, our events managers working really hard to try and get women on agendas and sometimes finding challenges with that. I think that's a key part of it as well, that women are, I think, sometimes less likely to put themselves forwards for those opportunities, maybe are just a little bit more hesitant about doing it. And women just, there still just isn't enough women in senior positions, I think. And I feel like we'll probably talk about this a little bit more, but having women in those roles where they do become sort of the voices for their organisations and able to share. So I think we've come a long way and it is getting better, but I think just having more diversity when we're looking at panels and agendas in general is where we need to go.
And I promise I am definitely working on just that huge gap we have of women in leadership, women in senior positions. And for me, I think the crux there is it's really around recognition and promotion and us being able to actually invest in women long term, which is why I was super keen for you to come on this episode and talk about being in a role in a company in lots of different roles for over 10 years, which is just fantastic to see. We've also spoken about financial inclusion, and I know you've got some thoughts around improvements that could be made for financial inclusion for better female access. So I want you to share them as well, please.
Yeah, one of the things that we have seen in our data at RFI consistently over time is a gender difference when we look at sort of financial inclusion, financial wellness, sort of different terms that we can use. But really the key one that we see pretty consistently is that women are less confident in managing their finances. And that's despite the fact that women in a lot of households, I think, still do play quite a key role in managing household budgets and household finances. But women, yeah, generally feel less confident managing their finances. They're in some markets less likely to hold credit products. So that shows to me an aversion to debt, or maybe a lack of, again, confidence in managing debt appropriately, less likely to have investment products as well. And that has longer term impacts for women, especially when women do take time out of work to raise kids and to have families. So they're already at a disadvantage. In Australia, we have compulsory super, so compulsory retirement funds, and women generally have less money in their retirement when they retire. So I think it's quite a complex issue and a really important one. And there needs to be, I think, I know that there's a lot of financial institutions who think about financial wellness and how to improve financial wellness for customers and help them improve financial wellness. But there does need to be quite a specific focus on women. So having financial wellness programs that are targeted at women, having women involved in creation of products, I think, is really important as well. So is a woman going to feel comfortable taking out this product? Is this terminology the correct terminology to use? Do we need to have specific programs, specific products that really do address the needs of women, or just a different way of communicating to women as well? I think there's a fine line there in terms of making sure you're not being obviously condescending, or you don't want to create a pink credit card or something like that. But there does need to be a really specific focus on women, and part of that will come back to who's in the room when financial institutions are creating those products and making those decisions. Are women's voices being heard? Are diverse voices being heard? And is what they're saying being fed into those decision-making processes around new products and, and new services?
Yeah, fantastic. It's brilliant the way that you've described all of that. And, you know, you've really hit the nail on the head there. Like, we need to have those people in the room with voices and ability to really speak out, to say exactly what things should look like. And I think this is why podcasts like this are just so important, because we're talking about how the entire industry can work in a much more inclusive way so that those voices can be heard, but also those voices can be spoken, because there are some environments where an individual wouldn't want to speak. There isn't that psychological safety. So it takes me quite nicely onto my final question. I can't believe we're here already. What would your call to action be for building an industry where our workplaces are more inclusive?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of parts to this. I think, I mean, the main thing, and we've already spoken about this a little bit, is having women at senior management levels. And over the last few years, I think we've seen a recognition that it's really important to have more gender representation. But I think a lot of that has been focused more on entry level and middle management roles. I think there's a lot of organizations which have come a really long way at getting towards 50-50 gender equality, but it doesn't necessarily extend to C-suite and doesn't extend to the board. And we need women in those positions as well. And some of that's generational. Some of, hopefully, the work you're doing and seeing more women come through in those middle management roles, they will then progress through to board and C-suite level. But I think there needs to be really a specific focus on that, and a recognition as well that maybe a female candidate might look different to who you'd normally hire, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong for the job or they don't have the experience, because they will have other experience, which is really important and valid and potentially even better. And that helps with all of what we've spoken about, having women in those decision-making positions who can then make sure that if they're supporting other women coming up, that they're helping to create a really inclusive product. And actually, just beyond sort of gender equality, as a bank or financial institution, you want the people who are making decisions to reflect your customer base, and having your customers' voices really amplified in the decision making as well. So I think, I mean, that's where we have to get to. But the other part of it that I think is quite critical to getting there is around parental leave. I think we have to have, and we're starting to see more of it, we have to have more equal parental leave. We need to support women coming back into the workplace. With COVID, I think we're already starting to see more flexible working, but continuing to support more flexible working will have a big impact on women. And I also think we need to encourage men to take longer parental leave. Men should be spending more time with kids, having more of a role in being a primary caregiver. And that also removes bias, which is something that I only thought about recently, that if you're hiring two people who may be in their 30s, if the man is as likely to take parental leave as the woman, that removes bias from a hiring decision, as well as having all of those other benefits. So I think that's actually a really critical part of it as well.
And, you know, I couldn't agree more with all of this. And what's been brilliant about this podcast is you've shared so much evidence along with everything that you've been talking about, which kind of makes sense in the role that you're in with all your data and the market research. But it's been such a brilliant podcast, and so much that we can take away from it and implement. And just talking to you, I feel really invigorated to go out there and do more and really talk to people about what are we doing to appropriately recognise our staff and appropriately promote people and invest in them long term. So thank you so much for joining me on the Women of FinTech podcast series.
Thank you so much for having me.